Hi everyone, and welcome to day four of 7 days, seven podcasts. It's day four already. We're over the halfway point. We're almost at the weekend for NXT and SummerSlam. I'm in New York City. I'm currently staring out the window at FedEx trucks and lots of men with cigarettes hanging out their mouths.
Welcome to America.
America. The first thing I saw when I was in the taxi coming across from the well, it was funny actually. I was going through New Jersey and I saw signs for Hoboken, which immediately made me remember Bob,
Yeah.
our co-host who died on us. So thanks, Bob. But yeah, so I saw Hoboken. That was good.
Cool.
Waved to him. But well, he's not there anymore. But I waved to his spirit because I'm sure he haunts people. But
I like
we
to
were on
think
our way
so.
into New York. Yeah, exactly. So we were on our way into New York and it ended up that the first sign that I saw was it's for Manhattan Storage. It was like a storage company, and it was the tagline was, "I like my wife and kids, but I need my storage." And it was a guy half dressed in drag with like loads of wigs and dresses behind him. I thought, that's such an American advert. But it was kind of great. So yeah, and there's been some news that's come out, aka The Observer has come out, so there's some more news. And we both watched the 24 special. So there's lots to talk about, Sandra.
Yeah, there is. The 24 special was so good. So good. I don't know. What are we talking about first?
Well, I actually, so I have a confession to make. I hadn't listened to the initial debut edition of the SmackDown summary because I was busy when it came out and I kept meaning to get to it. So when I was on the plane, I was like, I'm going to go back and listen to this. So I'm going to listen to Robert and Sandra talk about the first episodes.
So
And
you've been giving me crap about ripping SmackDown a new arsehole and you hadn't even listened to the show?
kinda.
Ugh.
But I was intending to listen to it, which is why I gave you the shit. And yeah, oh, you did. Your women's rant was as good as I'd hoped it would be.
Well, thank you. I stand by it.
So,
I'm
but I'm
glad things are looking up now.
well, I'm glad that because like the whole time Robert's kind of like, there's not much hope for SmackDown. And I actually think SmackDown has improved quite a lot over the last 3 weeks. So I'm glad that it's got better. So hopefully, when he comes back, he's open to maybe talking about SmackDown again. But should we kick off with a news item that Brian had sent in to us to talk about Dean Ambrose? Have you seen this?
Sure, I honestly haven't seen much, if any, news today, so this will all be news to me as well.
Okay, so apparently, according to Dave Meltzer and the Wrestling Observer, there's some heat with Dean Ambrose from the WWE due to his appearance on the Steve Austin show,
Oh, there's a shocker.
and it stems from him sort of being negative on creative, and they were unhappy that he said that Brock Lesnar didn't really do anything at WrestleMania 32. But I mean, like, because I'm not the biggest Dean Ambrose fan in the world, I don't hate him or anything, but he's just not, he's not my guy or somebody that I'm overly keen on. But I kind of have the mindset of like, good for him for saying something if that's what happened. Like, good for him for
Yeah.
speaking up.
I think good for him for speaking up. I mean, especially that's what Austin wants, right? Like, Austin doesn't want these shows to just be puff pieces. He wants people to open up. And I mean, at the end of the show, when he challenged Dean Ambrose, and I did listen to it, I didn't watch it. I didn't think it was as bad as everyone was saying, but I mean, I don't know. Maybe podcast one worked some magic and edited stuff, or maybe it was because I couldn't see their body language during the show. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't think it was a good interview by any means, but it wasn't as bad as I expected it to be, I guess. But yeah, I mean, there were certain comments that Dean Ambrose just really came off as he doesn't give a shit. And I mean, like, he doesn't really give a shit about playing politics and whatnot, right? Which kind of reminded me as I was listening to it, isn't that what wrestlers used to do all the time? Isn't
Yeah.
that what Steve Austin used to do? Like, isn't that how Steve Austin got to where Steve Austin is?
Yeah, no, you're right. It's interesting. I mean, I think the Steve Austin podcast was the facial expressions on the actual video version made it worse than just
I
the
kind
audio.
of
So
wondered if it did.
I think that's probably what happened and why you didn't feel that it really was as bad as you thought it was going to be. But yeah, I mean, Steve Austin wanted him to tell the truth. We all knew, I mean, we all knew the Brock Lesnar Dean Ambrose match wasn't what it should have been. We were all wondering why. We're all still kind of wondering why, because, you know, for all the shit that, you know, say you gave Dean Ambrose or whatever, like, Dean Ambrose isn't a bad wrestler. Like, he's not somebody who is ineffective at being a wrestler. And the Brock Lesnar thing was, he was very good in the lead up to that. You know, he had the match with Triple H at Roadblock that was good. He was taking the match seriously with Brock. Like, I understand why he's a bit pissed, because it went, you know, going into it, it was like, you know, Dean Ambrose is the underdog. He's going to challenge Brock. And then Brock just kind of disposed of him very easily. You know?
And I mean, I think we all expected Brock Lesnar to win that match. Like, that wasn't a surprise. But I think something we had talked about leading into WrestleMania was that we expected it to be like a super hard fought battle, with Dean Ambrose looking super like valiant at the end and some crazy stuff. And we expected and hoped, I don't know if expected is the right word, but we hoped that it would be a match that kind of made Dean Ambrose look like a star and, you know, be a top guy going forward. And I mean, obviously he is one of the top guys in the company. He's the friggin' champion, but that match did not do him any favors. And hearing him say that, you know, he was met with laziness, or, I mean, maybe laziness is the wrong word. Maybe I don't want to do this. Maybe apathy would be more of a correct word. Like, Brock Lesnar just didn't care. Didn't necessarily surprise me. It's not like it was the most creatively fulfilling thing for Brock Lesnar. It's not like it's really something he would be sinking his teeth into, you know, which is no excuse. I mean, you should absolutely put your all into it. But I mean, Brock does what Brock wants to do, right? And
indeed,
Brock didn't want to do a lot regarding that match, it seems. And it doesn't surprise me, and I don't think Dean Ambrose is lying about that, because it would make sense.
Yeah, I kind of feel like him making those comments kind of makes him a more relatable champion, you know? Like,
it does.
Because put it this way, you know, we did the show yesterday, and you, for the first time, said, and it's funny, because then today me listening to you talking about the first SmackDown was really interesting, because you said on yesterday's SmackDown summary, you're into this program now with Ambrose and Ziggler.
Like, yeah, which I never thought I would be.
3 weeks ago, that Sondra was not for being put into this. You were like, oh, you know, about all of it. And they've managed to turn it around. And I think that one of the reasons that it is turned around for most people, you can obviously tell me if this is for you, but like, I think it's because Dolph Ziggler has actually spoken about what we want him to talk about. Like, he's, you know, it's not really seemed like he has cared about winning matches. It's just about showing off. And now he's actually confronting that and saying, well, no, actually, I do want to win. I'm tired of being pushed aside and just thought, oh, this guy can have a good match, but he can't actually do anything. And I think that makes him a more interesting character. So if Ambrose,
yeah, they've called to light all of my problems with Dolph Ziggler. Like, everything that Dean Ambrose has been saying about Dolph Ziggler has been what I've been saying about Dolph Ziggler. And so to have that be the crux of the feud is great.
Exactly. And then for Dean Ambrose to say on the Steve Austin podcast, you know, to basically name something that we've all kind of been like, I wonder what happened there. I think it's a good thing, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think Brock Lesnar gives a shit that he brought it up. Like, I don't think Brock probably cares. So,
no, I can
not
see why the company is upset, because they want, you know, they want Brock Lesnar to remain this mystique, and they don't want Brock Lesnar seen in that light, because it's just not something they would want talked about publicly. But I mean, if that's reality, and if that's going to make people relate to Dean Ambrose more, who's around all the time, I mean, maybe it almost does help Brock Lesnar in a way. It kind of enhances that Brock Lesnar seriously will do what Brock Lesnar wants to do mystique a little bit. So I don't think it hurts Brock Lesnar necessarily, because he's just going to be like, yeah, I didn't give a shit and I still don't. So
yeah,
I'm Brock 100%. Lesnar and I will kill you.
That is his motto. So that's something that's in the news. Another thing that's in the news that Stuart McPherson had sent along to us. Now, this could be storyline or not, but it appears that James Storm may be done with TNA.
Really?
Which, you know, I think all of us can understand why. Because he chose to not go to WWE, he chose to go to TNA, and then pretty much as soon as he went back, a couple of months later, his partner Bobby Roode leaves and goes to NXT, and James Storm's kind of left. You know, because James Storm was in TNA for a long, long time. and he's done pretty much everything there that he can do. So it confused me a little bit that he, like, what he would do post Bobby Roode. But I guess the question for you, since you're, you know, the NXT connoisseur of Inside the Ropes, is there a place in NXT, doesn't have to be with Bobby Roode, but is there a place in NXT for James Storm if this is true and he is actually done with TNA?
Honestly, not that I can see. Like, I just don't care that much about James Storm. And I've only been watching Impact for like a month. And
so you've really not seen any effective James Storm.
So I've really not seen any effective James Storm. Like, I saw James, like, he just comes to the ring on his little, like, scooter thing and...
Wait. He has a scooter?
Yeah. It's like a beer cooler thing.
This is not the James Storm that I know. The James Storm that I know used to come with a big long coat, a cowboy hat, and a bottle of beer.
Well, there's beer in the cooler thing.
But he's driving the cooler?
Yeah.
Okay. That's not going to sell me on watching a full episode of Impact, but okay.
I just really haven't seen him do that much, to be honest. Like,
yeah.
But, he beat Eli Drake for the King of the Mountain Championship and then just lost it to Lashley because Lashley's the king of being champion of everything. And that's all I've seen of James Storm. And, like, there's already such an influx of people coming in from the outside and being great. Like, I'm pretty into Austin Aries now, actually. It took a little while. I'm super into Bobby Roode immediately because he's glorious. But I don't know. Like, I mean, maybe there is a place for him, but it seems like there are so many other people that I want to see debut and get a chance and grow and become better characters other than James Storm. I'm just not that intrigued. But I mean, if they do something good with him and put him into an interesting story, I just don't, like, everyone's talking about maybe him coming in and teaming with Bobby Roode again. I don't want to see Bobby Roode have a tag team partner right away. And if I do, it should probably be Austin Aries at this point.
Yeah, you don't really want to rehash TNA stories.
Because, you know? I don't really know what beer money is, but it doesn't sound like something I want to see in NXT.
Well, the thing with beer money is beer money were great, but beer money were a long time ago. And it's like whenever Matt and Jeff Hardy get back together as the Hardy Boys, you're kind of like, it's not quite what it used to be in that incarnation. You know, if you try and be the Hardy Boys. Because,
like the Dudley Boys?
Yes. Like the Dudley Boys. But, yeah, I like James Storm. I was sad that he chose TNA over WWE selfishly, but I understood that he did it for money, so fair enough. But I wonder if that's backfired. Because if Billy Corgan, who's the new, you know, president of TNA, wants to do fresh stuff, like, I don't know if James Storm fits into that. You know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, but would he fit in any better in NXT?
I mean, it depends. You know, say Joe or Nakamura get called up after September and Bayley gets called up, like, you know, I know you don't like it, but, like, if they're going to keep NXT the way it is, they need more names.
Yeah, they do.
Know? Like, they do. So, he is a name. He is somebody who has got history with some of the people there, which helps, I guess, in a way, like Aries and Roode.
That's true. I mean, maybe there would be more of a place for him if some other people left. I will say that, because there are a lot of people in NXT who, you know, are outgrowing NXT very rapidly. And I feel like they could bring in more people after getting rid of some of the other ones. Like, there are some people that I would really love to see come on to SmackDown. And I think...
Wait a minute. I think you meant to say something else there and you said the wrong thing. Did you mean to say there's some people you would love to come up to Raw or SmackDown?
Sure, we'll go with that.
Oh, God.
SmackDown needs people.
And you know what annoyed me the most about that fucking SmackDown summary you two did? For weeks and weeks and weeks, I told both you fuckers, I said, they should put the women on one show. And then the other show, you can have Lana and Stephanie and all that. And then Robert just comes out with, do you know what? In hindsight, it should be that. You know, wait, no credit here. I'd been shouting it from the rooftops for months. Anyway.
Okay, Kenny. Okay.
But anyway, you were talking about people coming up. Was it because this is the thing? I mean, obviously, we're going to get into proper NXT predictions in the next day or two. But I mean, who do you? I mean, surely after TakeOver, one of Joe or Nakamura goes up.
Yeah, and that's so tricky. That's so tricky because I would rather Joe go up, and I would rather Joe keep the title, and I can't have both. And I guess we'll see what happens with that. It's kind of it's very strange going into this takeover because it seems like there's going to be another set of call-ups, right? Mm-hmm. And because there kind of needs to be, like, the draft was all well and good, but there aren't enough people to maintain, like, complete rosters, especially on SmackDown right now. So, yeah, I mean, we'll talk about it more when we get into NXT predictions.
But yeah, so I guess, you know, James Storm, stay tuned. Is it part of an angle? Is it real? We'll find out. Let's talk about... Oh, my God. Hang on, I just need to... Oh, no.
What?
Okay, more news. More news has come out.
Oh, no.
There's another wellness violation, folks.
Another one?
And it's one of the most interesting people on SmackDown, Eva Marie.
Are you serious?
Eva Marie has been suspended for 30 days for first violation of the wellness policy, which means that this Sunday there will be a 3-on-2 women's match.
Her most creative excuse yet.
I really hope that's what it is. It was just an excuse to get out. So, yeah. Eva Marie, there you go. Another one. Can we make it till Sunday with our MDLs? I swear to God, if Finn Balor is suspended tomorrow, I'm giving up. I'm selling my ticket and going home.
I'm sorry, I'm not over it yet.
So, thoughts, Sandra, on Eva Marie being suspended for a month?
Oh, this is the greatest thing in the world. I mean, from the woman who's, like, been getting stuck in traffic and practically taken off her top just to get out of matches.
I mean, obviously, we inside the ropes recognize what a serious situation this is, and we would not
it's
dare.
It's very serious. I'm not amused at all.
To laugh. Eva Marie. Good God. Can't believe it's another
goodness.
One.
They've apparently been doing a round of testing again. Like, it makes you wonder, right? Because the Paige and Del Rio thing coming right after Roman Reigns' deal, and, well, Connor, but nobody noticed. But before that, who was the last wellness policy violation? Hornswoggle?
Yeah, probably him.
I mean, it had been a good while since we'd had any wellness violations whatsoever. And, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and guess that it's not that everybody was super squeaky clean, especially for like 2 years or whatever. It seems like maybe testing wasn't going on quite as much. I don't know. Like, I mean, I don't know their process. I don't know how often they decide to come up and test some of these people, but Eva Marie, wow.
Yeah, there you go. So stay tuned for whoever's released whoever's got a suspension tomorrow, and we will endeavor to talk about that as well. Speaking of the women, though, there was the WWE 24 special, which they had a great graphic at the beginning where it came up Divas Revolution and then morphed into Women's Evolution.
Yeah.
And they told the history of the women's division of the company. You know, they talked about Moolah and Sherry and Sable, Lita and Chyna, and Trish was on it talking about how she, you know, tried to get away from, like, mud matches to get in wrestling matches, and her and Lita main eventing and all this sort of stuff. And then the Divas era, which we all look back with great fondness, I'm sure, up to the current era. So, I mean, you are, from day one, when you kind of started contributing to Inside the Ropes, you were, like, kind of pioneering there should be more women's wrestling in WWE.
I said, watch the women's matches, and I got real annoying about it, I'm sure.
And we were like, oh, but the women's matches are shite, Sandra. That's the problem. And you were like, no, but like, we can't, if we just think that way, we're not going to get anywhere. And, you know, crusade as you did. And now there's this documentary. Yeah, go ahead. Let's tackle it however you want to.
I thought this was great. It wasn't comprehensive by any means, and it was never going to be. Like, I mean, it was very much the WWE story of the women's evolution, not how it actually happened with all of the, you know, details and whatnot. I mean, WWE was basically putting out kind of a puff piece on it, right? Which I think is perfectly fine. It was still lovely for what it was. I mean, it was very cool to see them acknowledge, like, you know, we came from, you know, Mae Young and the Fabulous Moolah and, you know, Sensational Sherry. And they did show, like, Bull Nakano. And I wish they had talked about Alundra Blaze a little bit more or, you know, certain things. But, I mean, it's not a very long documentary piece, and so they're not going to include everything. I will say, like, the narrative of WWE women's wrestling history, and I wasn't around for this era, so maybe this was the case, but I kind of doubt it, because I'm a pretty big fan of Ivory, and what I've seen of Molly Holly, she seems really great. It does bother me that it's always Trish and Lita. It's just Trish and Lita, and they were the only two women, and they were the only ones that mattered, and they had matches, and nobody else did. Like, that's what it seems like when I watch anything about WWE history.
I think the reason that Trish and Lita get brought up so much is, A, because they were big stars.
Right.
They were the big stars. And also because they main evented Raw. You know, yeah. that's kind of the two reasons. But Ivory, you know, I thought they covered that era pretty well, you know, as someone who watched through it. Like, they did bring up Ivory. They did bring up Molly Holly. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more love for Jazz.
Yeah.
Because she was somebody who was very good when she came in, Victoria, the same thing. But they covered a lot of stuff that I didn't think they would ever talk about, to be honest. Which
they did
is good.
Talk about China.
They did, but they also talked about how the Attitude Era wasn't very good for women. And when I was watching, I was like, oh God, I can imagine Sandra just like clapping, going, yes!
I was very excited to see it. No, I'm glad that, you know, as a company, they're acknowledging it. And that's part of the redemption and the story now. Like, I don't think a year ago they would have necessarily talked about that so publicly, but now that they can show it as a, you know, and put spin on it, like, look how far we've come and look how we're treating our women now and that kind of thing. Like, you kind of have to have a before and an after. And the Attitude Era was the before. And I did appreciate that. I appreciated them showing Jerry Lawler being a super perv and not showing that in a very positive light. Kudos. Kudos, WWE, because... That man, ugh, just no. But it was very, yeah, I am not a fan. But it was very cool to see, and there were a couple video package like montages, especially that kind of got me. Like the one at the very end, especially where it showed the faces of so many women. Like I can't remember who was in each specific montage, or whatever. So I apologize, but throughout the documentary, we saw the notable names and we saw a lot of the people on the current roster. That picture of all of the, you know, main roster women looking, you know, together and being like solidarity and all that kind of stuff. I really, really loved that. It was very cool to see. But they also would cut and they showed Liv Morgan in it and they showed Billy Kay in it and they showed Ember Moon in it and they showed Nia Jax and they showed, you know, Alexa and they showed people who, like, Ember Moon hasn't even debuted yet. And, you know, you still see, like, just a little clip. It's like they clearly see something in these people. And so it was very past, present, and future. And that meant a lot to me. It really did, because it's very cool to see them not just talking about Trish and Lita, but it's also, like, looking forward. This is what we have. And this is kind of where we're going. And the future for women's wrestling actually seems pretty exciting in WWE right now.
It's funny you mentioned that because somebody tweeted me, I forget who it was, so I apologize, but they tweeted me saying, you know, don't you think Bayley should beat Asuka at TakeOver and stay in NXT? And I was like, no, I think that would be crippling to Bayley. Bayley needs to go now. Like, it's Bayley, if you look at Bayley's popularity now to where it was last year in Brooklyn, it's nowhere near.
Mm-mm.
So the only way to get that back is to get it in the main roster. And like the thing with the women's division in NXT is and this is just my opinion from not watching it every week, I don't think it's anywhere near as good as it was a year ago. But the reason for that is because they're in a rebuild phase. You know, they have to rebuild with new people. And
I think Bailey needs to make room for the new division.
Exactly. As long as you have Bailey there, you've basically got everybody who is not as good as Bailey or Asuka. You know, that's kind of, and that's just, I don't think that's a healthy way to have it. You know, I think Bailey needs to go, have Asuka there, and then, you know, the people that you always tell me about, Billie Kay and Liv Morgan and Peyton Royce, you know, the only way they're going to get anywhere is if they're pushed and they are the future stars. So,
and there are a lot of women who are just waiting to debut. I mean, last night we saw three new debuts. We saw Mandy Rose, we saw Daria, and we saw Nikki Glencross. And I mean, as soon as they give Nikki Glencross a microphone, oh boy, watch out, because I cannot wait.
Indeed. Now, I wanted to ask you something else that's come up. Any other thoughts on the women's 24 special before we move on?
I just appreciated how all-inclusive it was. I think the focus on Stephanie McMahon was a little overdone, but, you know, it was always going to be. Stephanie McMahon is the savior of the women's division or whatever, and whatever. That's part of their narrative. But overall, it made me cry multiple times, and I never thought a couple years ago when I was crusading and saying, no, watch the women's matches, pay attention to the women's matches, like, they could be good, I promise. I didn't actually think we'd get to this point this quickly. It seems like a really long, like, long time coming, but I also wasn't sure if we'd ever get here, so I'm really excited.
It's a good place to be. Something that's come out in the last kind of week or so, and this shocked me quite a bit, was Shawn Michaels is apparently going to be relocating to Florida, to Orlando.
Is he officially? Because I saw that he was, and then I saw that he maybe wasn't.
So Triple H on the NXT conference call has said that basically the decision is up to Michaels. But he, like, they want him. And apparently he's put his ranch and home on sale.
Oh, okay.
So, and here's the thing, like, this is one of the best things that could happen to the Performance Center. This is huge news. Sondra and I have bickered before. Well, not bickered, we didn't bicker about it. We just discussed it. I found it kind of insulting that Sami Zayn was given promo lessons, because I just don't think he's at that point. You know, I like Sami Zayn. I'm a fan of him. But the only way we're going to get great talkers is to get great talkers to help. And someone like Shawn Michaels was good at everything. He could talk. He could wrestle. He could perform to a high level. And I think having him in the Performance Center, no disrespect to William Regal or Billy Gunn or Sara Amato or Matt Bloom, whatever, this is going to be the first time that a main headlining star has went to the Performance Center to help these kids out. And I think that's huge.
Since Dusty Rhodes.
Since Dusty Rhodes. But as a kind of, you know, apparently he's going to be like a full-time coach. That's the idea. He would be replacing Terry Taylor. This is great. Like, I'm far more excited about the future with Shawn Michaels involved.
I'm glad that you're excited. Everyone's telling me that this is such big news. I guess I just don't really care about Shawn Michaels as much as everybody else cares about Shawn Michaels. But I understand the point. And yes, I do think it's very good. I do think it's very good that he's going to be coaching down there. And it's the class that he's taking over or co-teaching, because I mean Terry Taylor's not like done, but he had surgery or something, right? But I think he's
back. He had neck surgery,
so I mean, like, I haven't really read a lot of the ins and outs of it, but
well, apparently they're sending Sarah Amato and Adam Pearce up to the main roster as
right so I mean, they do need some more people, and Shawn Michaels is definitely a big name to start working with those people down there. And the class or whatever that he's said to be working with is the finishing class. So like the finishing touches, the final polish, the, you know, it's not a beginning rookie kind of a class, right? It's going to be like the upper level talent that you're seeing on TV and whatnot.
Which is perfect for him.
Which is like perfect for him. So I think it sounds like a great fit. And
because, you know, it's not, he's not going to be on TV. It's not like a TV role or anything like that.
Thank goodness.
This is like a real behind the scenes thing. And like, well, I get you might not be excited about it, but for me, as someone who has watched wrestling for 20 years, I'm just glad that there's a big star from the modern era that's going to be helping out the new guys. Because
I think it's great. Girls. And it's not that I'm not excited, like, oh, blah, 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 I don't like this. I like it fine. I think I'm just not as, like, invested as someone like you who, you know, watched Shawn Michaels and whatnot.
I mean, I'm, you know, I have my issues with Shawn Michaels, not personally, but, you know, I have issues with part of his career. But like I say, like my whole thing about, you know, bringing guys up from NXT and stuff is that there's not that many people coming up that are stars, like big stars.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think that if Shawn Michaels can get to someone who is maybe on the cusp and he can put them in the right direction or whatever, that's what they need. And especially with Dusty Rhodes gone, you know.
Yeah.
I've always said I think that it's great to have guys in there who know how to wrestle and know how to work for a long time, like Robbie Brookside and William Regal and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, not that many people know how to main event at WrestleMania. Shawn Michaels does.
And that's why having him on, like, a finishing class makes perfect sense to me. Because, I mean, different coaches are going to have different roles, right? Like, the people who are very good at wrestling should be coaching wrestling. And the people who are very good at promos and stuff. And I would include William Regal in the very good at promos and character and making things matter and that kind of stuff. But having Shawn Michaels and William Regal there isn't going to hurt.
Indeed. And just before we can sign off our part here and send it over to part two of Jim Ross, Kota Ibushi said that he has turned down a full-time deal with WWE. He has said this in the Japanese press. So he was asked and he said he's turned it down.
Yeah.
So it's pretty interesting.
He said he might still continue to work with them, but
yeah, he said
he turned down a full-time deal.
He may continue to wrestle some shows here and there for them, but he was asked about wrestling in Japan. He said, yes, I can't see the details, but I'm already booked in Japan. So it'll be intriguing to see if they can talk him round.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it will depend on how badly they want him and how much money they're willing to throw at him. And how open to it he even would be.
Indeed. So I guess just as we sort of sign off, anything else that you want to quickly discuss before we go?
No, I don't think there's anything else really to talk about right now. Plus, I do need to get to work.
But did you watch the Cruiserweight Classic yet?
Oh, I love the Cruiserweight Classic. Yesterday was probably my favorite episode so far.
Brian Kendrick, Akira Tozawa, and Noam Dar have all advanced.
They have, but did Jack Gallagher not look like the biggest star?
He did. He will. I'm confident he'll be signed in the next year.
Oh,
like,
man.
if he wants to be. But Noam Dar, he's continuing.
He's
on this
continuing. Road. I was so excited. I mean, like, I loved Ho Ho Loon, but
you know where your bread's buttered, Sandra.
Yeah. No, it was all about Noam Dar, obviously.
So, thanks for sticking with us on the 7 Days 7 podcast. It is now time to hand over to Jim Ross for part two, where we're going to talk Conor McGregor, Brock Lesnar, SummerSlam moments, all different stuff, and we'll be back tomorrow to catch up with Sandra on what's been happening in NXT in the last month or so leading into TakeOver at the weekend. So, Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW.
You can find me at KennyMC1985, and we will see you tomorrow.
Bye.
Another thing for SummerSlam that I'd be intrigued to get your take on is the match with Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton. You know, Randy Orton returns. He's had more fire in him since he's come back. Brock Lesnar's back again for another big time match. How do you sort of see this one playing out, and where do you want to see Brock Lesnar go next as a character? Because obviously he only does a few dates a year. He's done the long title run. He conquered the streak. What else would you like to see from Brock Lesnar in WWE?
Well, you know, selfishly, I'd like to see more dates. I'd like to see him more often. I don't know if that's feasible or possible, and as far as contractually or his mindset and things of that nature. You know, if a guy has a part-time gig and he's making multiple $1 million a year and with that formula, you know, you might be hard pressed to get him to change. So I'd like to see him work more dates, but you know, that's my pie in the sky. You know, just he's one of two guys that WWE has, along with John Cena, that are truly over, that are truly major stars that sell tickets, and that's not a knock on any of the other. It's not a knock on Dean Ambrose or Seth Rollins or you know, Roman Reigns or anybody whatsoever. Getting over to selling tickets and merchandise, and you know, increasing the subscribers on WWE Network is a process, and in today's world where there's so much information flow on social media, you know, all the shows like this, shows like my podcast, there's a lot of info out there that you know we didn't have 10 years ago. So when the Attitude Era that we're going to talk about on your show, we didn't have all those so-called distractions or issues to deal with. So it's harder to get over. But I'd like to see Lesnar continue to work in main event level matches and be on TV enough that there can be somewhat of a personal issue established between he and his next opponent. I think WWE, on the sporadic basis of getting Orton back from his surgery and getting and Lesnar's schedule, they've done a really nice job. When Orton came to Raw and gave the RKO to Brock, was a real eye opener, and it was, you know, it's like, oh wow, look at this, you know, Orton's not intimidated. You know, I signed both those guys. They were one same recruiting class. They're in Ohio Valley Wrestling, OVW, together. And I think the only thing I would say is that, you know, WWE could have probably gone back and looked at some of those tapes that they own, those guys, and they were young bucks that kind of would have been kind of fun to watch little snippets of their early career, because quite frankly, Kenny, they were both very, very good early on. Mm-hmm. You know, they were two great recruits, and they both had really good instincts, especially Orton. Orton had, because Orton's grandpa was a great wrestler, one of the best in America. His dad, you know, Cowboy Bob Orton, was, you know, we all know, a Hall of Fame guy. So Randy kind of didn't fall far from the tree, as they say. He had great instincts from the get go. Lesnar was not a wrestling fan. I don't know if he's a wrestling fan today. He's a fan of the wrestling's money, but he's acquired the taste. And the other thing that Lesnar has that helps him stay on a great path is he has Paul Heyman, who's a genius. So I'd like to see Lesnar continue to have whomever he wrestles, the young guys he wrestles, having matches with Brock Lesnar can really validate these talents if the match is structured correctly. But he needs to have, they can't be cold matches. They need to be based in some sort of personal issue, or to make them be more more interesting, in my opinion. But you know, in a perfect world, I'd like to see him wrestle more. But until then, strategically using him keeps him fresh, and that's really unique in today's world. He's fresh. Every time you see him, you don't say, "Oh, here's Lesnar again." You don't get that way because he's not around that much.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny because obviously you mentioned that Brock being one of the top two guys that is really over and can sell tickets. How important is it? I mean, to me, it's a great thing that with the new championship that they're bringing in on Raw, the WWE Universal Championship, say what you will about the name, but Finn Balor against Seth Rollins is such a great match. You know, it's two young guys, Finn Balor, who's just debuted in the main roster, Seth Rollins, who in 2015 was one of the best of the year. Seeing them together in one of the top title matches is a great thing, and it feels fresh as well.
Absolutely. And They are both building blocks of the future of WWE, without question. Two outstanding talents, two talents that I would have really coveted signing back in my day in that world, without question. They're quality guys. They're great in the locker room. They don't bring a lot of baggage with them that I'm aware of whatsoever. They're both fans. They both have paid their quote-unquote dues. All the things that are in place there. They both stay in great shape. They're both very athletic. So the issue here is that here's what I would suggest to fans that watch that. Perhaps fans will make too big a deal, Kenny, on who wins and who loses. I am more of a wrestling, in-ring wrestling snob. I'm not as concerned about who wins and who loses because here's the deal. If let's say your favorite wins, mm-hmm. but they have a so-so match, did we really win in the process or not? I say if the match is amazing, it is so captivating and so so terrific that we really the winner and loser really becomes an afterthought. Because I just saw a great match, and those 3 seconds that it took to determine the winner and the loser really played a smaller part in the whole formula, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
so I just hope that they have a. I said on my podcast that'll be out this week. I do my predictions on the show, and I think that that match has. If I had to pick one match that has the best chance of stealing the show. It would be Balor versus Rollins. And quite honestly, I think Rollins will win it, and I don't have any issues with that as long as the two gentlemen have a terrific presentation, and I have every belief that they will.
And something else that everybody's been talking about the last kind of week or so are the comments from Conor McGregor about WWE and John Cena and different things. Some people seem quite agitated by it. Some people are quite amused by it. What did you think when you first saw those comments and just how it's played out?
I thought that Conor McGregor was on a fishing expedition and that he was throwing his line out in the water, and many of the wrestling fans and even the wrestlers themselves were his fish. He was an angler, and he was looking to fill his boat with fish, and he succeeded. He knows how to play the audience. One of the great traits of any pro wrestler that's a villain, one of the great things that they can do if they're successful is they can create the burning desire from the fans to invest in their next match to see that villain lose. And so once Conor McGregor turned, quote-unquote, on the wrestling fans and started dissing the wrestlers, the genre of wrestling, he insulted a lot of fans, and they have reacted. And so now the question is, will their reaction create the desire for them to buy the pay-per-view that he's the main event of which he gets paid a bonus money for each pay-per-view sold? Will they make their decision to buy that pay-per-view to see him get beat up? So to me, that's the simple way of looking at it. I think it's the honest way of looking at it because I know that as a kid, because WWE for years has been strong in the UK. Mm-hmm. A lot of kids grew up, watching WWE. I don't know why he would be any different. I don't know why he would be any different than any other kid in Ireland, or anywhere in that region of the world. So he's just a typical kid, I'm sure, when he's young. So I think he's using that passionate fan base as a way to generate more pay-per-view buys. I applaud him for it. I think he's smart. I think he's a good marketer. He's got a natural gift of gab. He's easy to dislike if you choose to. So he's a natural heel. So now, if you're Irish, or I'm sure in certain parts of the UK, he's not a villain. He's a hero. He's the cult hero. And I have no problem with that. So I think he was smart, Kenny. I think he was very strategic in how he positioned his words and what he said. He just had a big diatribe a couple of weeks ago. Then this week he's come back again. Knocking John, like you said, he knocked John Cena, he's picked his spots. When he didn't knock the McMahons, or Triple H or some of the big time players there, you know, or The Rock, I thought, okay, he just opened the door of what really is his motive. Because if he was going to be pissed off at wrestling, he'd be pissed off at everybody in wrestling, not just a few. So
almost like he's maybe angling for a future WrestleMania payday, perhaps.
Well, yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Floyd Mayweather did it. Made a lot of money. Mike Tyson did it. Made a lot of money. And the bottom line is this. He realizes he can't fight at the highest level for the biggest purses forever. It's impossible. Nobody does. So he's got to look at other gigs and other opportunities. So I just think he's like a farmer. He's planting the seeds. It's like planting trees. Conor McGregor is planting trees, and it will take a while for these trees to mature. But when they mature, they'll have roots, deep roots in the ground, and they'll be there for all to see. And so I think he's a really brilliant marketer, and he's got the mic skills that many of us, longtime wrestling fans, remember some of the great wrestling villains had, where they would get us emotionally involved in what was going on via their words. And so I think he's a crafty character without question, and one that is extremely interesting to me. I was going to buy the pay-per-view long before he made his comments, quite frankly. I'm a big USC fan, and I'm a fan of his. He's an amazing attraction. Now, whether he wins or loses, again, this comes back to what we talked about Balor and Rollins. I don't know if he beats Diaz the second go-round or not. I don't know if he changes his game plan. But really, I'm not watching the pay-per-view because to find out who's going to win or lose. I'm watching the pay-per-view to see a hell of a fight. And may the best man win, as they say.
Yeah, 100%. And as we sort of wind down here, you've been generous with your time. SummerSlam's on Sunday, but you've been a part of a lot of SummerSlams. When you think of SummerSlam and all the ones that you've been a part of, what are the kind of big moments that you remember and that you kind of that stick out to you?
Well, I had in the mid-90s, I did the first radio broadcast of SummerSlam with the late Gorilla Monsoon. And because of my respect and love of him, that one always stands out prominently. I enjoyed being around Curt Hennig. He and I were in the same Hall of Fame class of 2007. And one of my favorite shows was 96. Shawn Michaels had a phenomenal match with Big Van Vader in 96. And the broadcast team was Vince McMahon, Mr. Perfect, and myself. I really had a lot of fun with that because I was kind of early in my WWE run. Mm-hmm. Probably the match that stands out among many, but the one that probably gets the wins by a nose is 2002 when Shawn Michaels came back from a four-year absence after a back injury to work with Triple H in a main event match, and nobody knew what Shawn had left in his tank. Nobody knew if his back would hold up. Nobody knew if it wouldn't be anything more than just a one-off match, so that he could kind of... I know Shawn was also involved in my piece for FoxSports.com, said, you know, I was coming back to do one more match because I wanted to leave the fans with a different memory than my match with Austin at WrestleMania 14. So that match really stands out because Michaels really proved on that night after a four-year absence that he was as good as anybody in the wrestling business still. And they had a tremendous match, and I was very. If you go back and listen to it, you can tell by my voice and how I was doing my job that I was really into that show, that match. That I was so shocked, and it was amazing how good Shawn was. Mm-hmm. And Triple H, to his credit, was the perfect opponent for Shawn. I don't think Shawn handpicked Triple H to be his opponent because he wanted somebody he could totally trust. And that match was just absolutely amazing. 2002 SummerSlam, it was a clinic. They had a clinic on how to have a big time match, and y'all can't see that match enough. And I'm not a big fan of my own work as a rule, but I thought we did a pretty nice job on that night.
Yeah, I remember watching that live, and he just surpassed every expectation I think anyone had at any point. It's funny, the other night I was watching some old SummerSlams back, and I watched the main event of the 98 SummerSlam, Highway to Hell, with Austin and Undertaker, and your calls during that match were just the emotion that you had in that era, where, you know, we're going to talk about that kind of era when we get to London, but watching you call that match with Austin Undertaker was just, there's an emotion in that kind of era when you're calling those matches that I don't think has been replicated.
Well, I appreciate that. I sit down there as a wrestling fan with the best seat in the house, very honored and privileged to be in that role, and I just... I never played the role of a wrestling announcer. I had a phony name. I had, you know, I was just me. I always say for better or for worse, because everybody didn't love my work. Some people didn't, and a lot did, thank God. But, you know, I appreciate that. Those nights are magical, and, you know, they were to me very special. It wasn't just me showing up to do my job. The broadcasting wrestling, especially in the Attitude Era, was not just a job for me. It was my life, and it was my passion, and you know, there was nowhere else on earth at that point in time that I would have rather been than there doing that job, and that's a fact. So that's why it sounded that way, I think, is because I was really emotionally engaged in what I was doing, and much like I'll be in Newcastle. You know, I don't plan on coming to Newcastle. Well, hey, Kenny, remember that great job I did? You told me I did in '98. Mm-hmm. Well, let's just think about that, because I don't think I can do that again. Look, here's the thing. I've always said this, and it's real important to understand and to remember for wrestling fans when you listen to a broadcaster. The wrestlers always write the music. If their music is great, if their music is compelling, if their music is entertaining and athletic and all the things you want, then it's incumbent upon the broadcaster to provide the lyrics. And on that night in '98, as you illustrated, the wrestlers, Austin and Undertaker, wrote amazing music. And that challenges then the broadcasters to have amazing lyrics. So in Newcastle, if those lads and lasses, ladies, will write the music, I promise you the lyrics will be spot on.
Can't wait. So yeah, if you're going to be coming to the London show with Jim Ross and Jim Cornette talking the Attitude Era, cannot stress enough, this has never been done before, may never be done again, from two of the most influential people at that time in the WWF, insidetheropes.co.uk for tickets. But if you want to hear Jim Ross, see Jim Ross, call in the action, refuse to lose iPay-per-view in Newcastle on October 6th, it's wc.pw. But before we let you go, Jim, for those fans here in the UK who are, you know, beginning to save their money, beginning to do overtime at work so that they can buy their WrestleMania ticket in November for Orlando, you're going to be there. You're going to be in Orlando with your one-man show once again.
I am. I started at WrestleMania 30, I think it was. So 30, 31, and 32, I've done my Ringside with Jim Ross show at WrestleMania's New Orleans, San Jose, and then in Dallas, of course. And been very blessed. The audience are wonderful. We sold out three shows this year in Dallas at the House of Blues, had a lot of fun, had a lot of different guests, a lot of laughs. And so the tickets for those shows, right now I have two shows booked for Orlando. The Saturday before WrestleMania, doors open at noon, and then so it's an afternoon show. And then Sunday before WrestleMania, the doors open also at noon, again, hence a matinee. The shows will be over at plenty of time to get to the Hall of Fame, if that's where you're going, or wherever else on Saturday night, and certainly long before you know, plenty of time to get to WrestleMania itself on Sunday. And but the key thing I would suggest is that last year, on the very first day, we sold all of the VIP tickets, which gets you the meet and greet, get in early, the best seats, everything, on the first day. There's only 100 of those seats per show. So the tickets for all tickets for both shows will go on sale on Monday, August 22nd, which is the Monday after SummerSlam. And you can get them online at Ticketfly.com. So all I'm saying is that I'm just encouraging the fans, if you're coming to WrestleMania and you want to come to my show, you might want to consider getting your tickets early. The tickets price has started only $25, $25. And there's only 100 per event for the VIP meet and greets. So Monday morning, 10 o'clock Eastern time, ticketfly.com, Kenny. And you know, again, if you want to come, I can't create more tickets. Once those VIP tickets sell, they're gone. They're not going to be more tickets added. I'm not going to job somebody with that deal. It's just the fact is there's 100 per show, and once they're gone, they're gone, and they will go on sale on Monday, August 22nd, the day after SummerSlam.
There you go. You've got it. So you can see Jim Ross at Inside the Ropes Live with Jim Cornette on October 5th in London. You can see him refuse to lose the iPay-per-view, returning to commentary. The King of Commentary returns on October 6th in Newcastle, or you can see him in Orlando, ticketfly.com. And then there's the Ross Report, where you've got every week given as guests. Like last week you had Prince Puma, Ricochet, Jay Lethal. I assume you'll be doing a SummerSlam review next week with somebody.
I'm doing a SummerSlam review, Kenny, with Brian Alvarez of the Wrestling Observer.
Great.
He's Dave Meltzer's partner in the Wrestling Observer, Brian Alvarez. And he's a very entertaining, opinionated, I love it, guest. So Brian will join me next week, and we'll chop up SummerSlam thoroughly. It'll be fun, and so every week's an adventure for me. I love this podcast, and I'm very thankful and grateful that the fans enjoy listening. And hey, you know, heck, it's free. You know, if you subscribe at iTunes, it costs you nothing. And the show will be downloaded to the device of your choice automatically every week. And we have a new show drop every Tuesday night in the States at 9 p.m. Eastern. So that's early Wednesday morning for you folks.
Absolutely. So, yeah, check out the Ross Report. We hopefully see you at one of Jim's shows. Jim, I want to thank you for coming on and being so generous with your time. You can follow him on Twitter at JRSBBQ. And we will see you in October.
I can't wait, Kenny. I look forward to it. And I hope the fans, hey, we got the same situation for your shows in London. We got a little VIP meet and greet going on there, and that's always a blast because, you know, it's good to be able to look at fans in the eye and thank them for their support and just, you know, treat them with respect that they deserve. But, you know, I'm sure that you probably have more information on this, but there's only a certain amount of those VIP tickets available.
Yeah, we only have 100 VIP tickets. Now, your VIP ticket gets you a photo op with Jim Ross and Jim Cornette together.
Yeah, that's
like,
great.
Who else gets that? There's only 100 of these tickets, and already half of them have gone.
Great.
In 2 days. So once they're gone, like sometimes we try and like get some more. Once they're gone, they're gone. So
yeah,
if you're thinking about it, don't miss out. Don't be getting the £25 general admission ticket thinking, oh, if only I just bought sooner, I could have went VIP, because the VIPs will sell out. So make sure you're part of it.
Sounds good, and we look forward to coming to London. And I've never had anything less than a splendid time in London. The fans are just great. They're respectful, they're learned, they're smart, they understand what's going on, they're loyal and dedicated, and just being around them makes you feel better. It makes you feel good about what you've devoted 40 years of your life doing. So it's an honor to be a part of it, and we're looking forward to it, and we'll entertain everybody thoroughly, I promise.
Fantastic. Jim, we'll see you in October. Thanks again.
Okay, Kenny, thank you.